here. So let's talk about what is one thing you want to learn in the next year. Kyle, do you want to start since you're right over here? Say your name too.
Good evening. My name is Kyle Kriminger, and I was asked to describe myself in 7 words.
All right, go ahead. Describe yourself in 7 words.
So I'll go ahead and do that. I'll do that first. I'm a progressive community organizer and New Legacy Project founder.
That sounds good. That sounds good. But what are you going to learn in this new year?
What am I going to learn in this new year? I'd like to go back to the Majeska Simpkin School for Human Rights and learn more about community organizing, the history of South Carolina, and how to make it different in the future.
That sounds good. We have our next person here.
Yeah, hello. I'm Chris McLaughlin, and that's actually very relevant to what I want to learn, because as I'm stepping down from the Treasury for the PSDA, I finally have my Mondays free, relatively.
Oh.
So I'm hoping to be able to actually attend the Majeska School come spring. So it's going to be exciting.
Say your name, Wayne.
Fitting. Oh, I have to cut that out. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So, hi, everybody. I'm Wayne Borders. I'm one of the co-founders of the New Legacy Project. And one of the things I'm hoping to learn in the next year is bake. I want to get really good at baking bread from scratch.
That sounds like a great thing to learn. I'm Vicki Perry, and I want to learn how to code in Python, I think. That was a goal for last year that I did not achieve, so we're going to just move it right on into the next year. I am sure many of y'all have heard in the last few weeks. We're planning on releasing this one on January 8th. So when we're talking to you, it's going to be about a month since this happened, that the Texas, a judge in Texas, I think it was it Texas, ruled that the ACA is unconstitutional in its totality, for lack of a better word. We here in South Carolina are in one of the states that has not expanded Medicaid yet. Kyle here is one of our experts on policy. Can you tell us a little bit about why we don't expand Medicaid in South Carolina?
Well, that's a good question. And the South Carolina Progressive Network actually worked for a year planning what we called the Truthful Tuesday Coalition. Truthful Tuesday Coalition. This was in 2013 that we were meeting with several different organizations from around the state.
Mm-hmm.
It was an ad hoc coalition. They got together to try to make some noise around this issue, and we had a strategic approach to forcing our legislature to address this very issue, why they didn't expand Medicaid. The South Carolina State Legislature said that they would not even talk about expanding Medicaid with the Affordable Care Act. We, after meeting for a year, called a shot we didn't know if we could make. The legislature reconvenes the second Tuesday of each January of every year.
Is today, if you're listening to this on January 8th, 2018.
And 5 years ago, that was in 2014, January 8th was also...
Oh, 2019, excuse me.
By coincidence, 5 years ago, January 8th, 2014 was also the first day of that legislative session. And we, again, called a shot. We decided to hold a rally as an initial public show of our disagreement with the state legislature's refusal to accept the Medicaid expansion with the Affordable Care Act. Cold, rainy Tuesday, 10 o'clock we got there, we were setting up. We didn't know, it was called for noon, was the start time for the rally. 10 o'clock, nobody was there, we were setting up. By noon, 1,000 people were there.
Yeah, which is a big deal here in South Carolina. So that's a lot of people for us.
Indeed, and there's been a lot of rallies in particular since our current president took power in January 2017, but a lot of the groups haven't had a strategic approach to change it, like the network has had. You see a lot of sort of the one thing we've been saying is some group strategy appears to be ready, aim, surrender. For example, a lot of liberals have been talking about taking a privatized version of Medicaid expansion. Other groups have just said ready, fire, aim. They just don't have a long-term strategic approach. And the difference with the Truthful Tuesday Coalition was that we had, after that rally, meetings or gatherings in which we mobbed the lobby and shamed the legislatures for refusing the Medicaid expansion.
Mm-hmm.
And we followed that up with 3 weeks of arrests, in which we took 39 arrests. And because the press was there, because they covered, for example, the first week, Reverend Tom Summers, a long time, has been a member of the network since the network was founded in 1996, Methodist pastor, now retired. He was arrested, and his picture was on the front page with handcuffs. We had planned it all with the Columbia City Police Chief at the time, who didn't know, like many people in South Carolina, that with the Medicaid expansion, all South Carolinians making less than 138% of the federal poverty level would have gotten a free Medicaid card. All the homeless people in Columbia, South Carolina would have gotten a free Medicaid card. The Columbia City Police Chief was shocked to know that. He said that would make our lives a whole lot easier, because we're essentially social workers with guns when it comes to working with the local homeless population.
So let's bring that back to where we are, because we've talked some about the strategy. What did the statistics in South Carolina look like? I know that Chris has worked some with economics, State of the Youth Project, and I know that Wayne has done a little bit with healthcare. What do those statistics look like for South Carolina? How many people will die every year because they did not expand the Medicaid population?
1,426, so 1,426 people will die this year because we have not expanded Medicaid.
Yeah.
Which is unacceptable.
Unacceptable. And aren't there counties in South Carolina that don't have hospitals anymore? I think we talked about this a little bit in our last.
Yeah, one of the first major hospitals to close was the hospital in Bamberg County. As of this taping, I believe there's a hospital in Fairfield County that's in danger of closing.
It closed yesterday.
They've already closed. Yes, yeah.
Yesterday.
Boom. You also have a situation too where hospitals are attempting to merge. These smaller rural hospitals are attempting to merge with larger conglomerate hospitals. The major one in our state, of course, is the Palmetto Health System. There's a significant amount of children that are born in South Carolina under the Medicaid program, and you know, mothers receive prenatal care under Medicaid, and already our Medicaid program is extremely restrictive.
Of course,
unless you are a parent. You know, particularly if you are a pregnant mother, or you are a child, or a very almost invalid elder individual, you're not going to receive Medicaid more than likely, which is why it was so significant for adults without children to be able to have qualified under that expanded program.
My friend Stu was one of the people who passed away because the governor did not expand the Medicaid program. He was 28 years old and he had pulmonary embolism, and he did not go to the doctor when he first started feeling bad because he couldn't afford it. And there are stories like that all over the state of people who die when they don't have to die.
Yeah, and particularly, you know, there are people, probably many more people, who don't just have health care that they can't afford or can't use, but people who simply are uninsured.
Yeah. I think you and I did the research, and one of the things I read during the health care research, and I'm going to double fact check this number, look in the show notes, and I'll make sure I get it right. It's up to 20% of all South Carolinians are uninsured and unable to get health care because of their insurance status, which is not something that should be happening in a civilized state. Kyle, I know you've done lots of research on this. What have you got to add to this?
Yeah, everything that Wayne and Chris just said, echo that. And with the Medicaid expansion, it was going to be for folks 18 to 64.
Mm-hmm.
Age 18 to age 64, who would have been eligible again under 138% of that federal poverty line, which is already very low.
Yeah.
It's about minimum wage. A little over 16,000 this year is 138%. 16,000, if you make that, that's your annual income. That or less, you would have been eligible for the Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. That's not much money. You can't.
No.
Hard to make ends meet on minimum wage, but between 200,000 and 300,000 South Carolinians would have been eligible for the Medicaid expansion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important also to note out that the immediate past governor of South Carolina, Nikki Haley, and our current governor have said that, Henry McMaster, have said that we cannot afford the Medicaid expansion, which is, again, we called it Truthful Tuesday because our leaders have had trouble veering from the truth. Uh-huh. For the first several, 3 years with the Affordable Care Act, the Medicaid expansion would have been covered in its entirety by our own federal tax mm-hmm. dollars. That money was not going to be saved. It was just going to be sent to other states like California and New Jersey that did take the Medicaid expansion. Yep. After that, there was going to be a gradual work-in to where we would eventually have had to pay 10%. So there was going to be a 9-to-1 match on Medicaid expansion dollars. Every $1 we put in, we were going to get $9 back. That's pretty good odds. That's better than Vegas, as they say.
Yeah.
But so the money, not only was it going to be free those first 3 years, but that 10% would have been covered, according to a study done by the University of South Carolina School of Business, and not known as a liberal institution.
Indeed.
Their study showed that because of the Medicaid expansion, South Carolina would have created 44,000 additional jobs.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question.
Yeah, 44,000 jobs, and that expanded tax base would have covered mm-hmm. the cost of that 10% match that we would have had to eventually put in by 2020 had we taken the Medicaid expansion.
Yeah. And that was actually something that came up when I had a meeting with now the former chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, Representative Brian White, who represents the Anderson area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he noted that, you know, health care in these rural areas was so difficult because they didn't have a tax base upon which, you know, to fund some of their government and other, you know, mm-hmm. municipality needs. And it was as if he just didn't understand the fact that because our state didn't take the Medicaid expansion funds, which is literally our own tax money back, that's part of why we're in this situation to begin with.
And when you think about hospitals closing, hospitals have a lot of local jobs associated with them. Everything from people who work in the cafeteria to billing specialists to nurses and doctors. Where do those jobs go when they're forced to close because they can't get paid by their patients? And Medicaid would have done that. There's also, when the ACCA came into being, there was an indigent care fund that got cut. So now hospitals are taking more and more losses because there's always going to be a certain amount of people who can't afford to pay their bills. I have worked in insurance for a long time, and insurance is risk management, basically. You buy an insurance plan in hopes that you are going to not need to use it. And if enough people buy those insurance plans, when the time comes, there will be money there for them to use. Insurance companies basically bet that their premium is going to be more than their claims. Okay, now you must be asking yourself, Vicky, where are you going with this? Are y'all asking yourself, Vicky, where are you going with this?
Always.
Okay. So by not having insurance, you're taking the risk onto yourself as opposed to passing it off to another person. And people who are in the 138% below the poverty line, they don't have that kind of income to take that risk. And I think as a government, we do have an obligation to, as a populace more than a government, we have an obligation to sort of take some of that burden off of them. And so it does bother me when South Carolina does not do its job and defend its lowest income citizens. What's the network's future path look like, Kyle?
I'll address that too. Let me just back up briefly.
Okay, please,
and wrap up that Medicaid expansion point. Because as you said, that indigent fund was removed with the Affordable Care Act because the Medicaid expansion was going to cover people who were indigent, was going to cover people who didn't have insurance, was going to cover those people who were showing up at the emergency room because they don't have a primary care physician. But our government was saying they didn't want to get in between their people and their doctor. Well, what doctor?
What doctor do they have?
What we kept saying. But it's a terribly complicated issue, as our listeners are noting. So many numbers, we've run through so many numbers already. And that was part of the problem, was an education gap. And so that's what we were doing with this issue. We were educating people, educating the public, and we were using this as an organizing tool to build power.
Yeah.
Power to do what, Wayne? What two things?
Power to punish and power to reward.
The power to punish and the power to reward. Because what we had found was, as I said, our legislature said that we're not going to talk about Medicaid expansion. Because we were there, because the press covered our rally, our mobbing of the lobby, the 39 arrests, because we did that, because we had planned for a year to do that and did it and followed through, they had to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
We blocked a so-called nullify Obamacare bill, or we gave, at least gave the Senate, the South Carolina State Senate, the cover, if you will, to block a nullified Obamacare bill. We showed the contradiction. There's an old saying about heightening the contradictions. We mm-hmm. heightened the contradictions in the sense that now we have a current governor, Henry McMaster, who said in one of the gubernatorial debates this past fall
mm-hmm.
that the free market is doing a great job providing health care to people in South Carolina.
I think he forgot to finish that statement, which is healthcare is basically, you know, healthcare. People are being served, you know, well by their healthcare in South Carolina. Who can afford it?
Yeah, mm. Henry McMaster is basically the Disney
yeah.
villain
or,
that we all know and love in this state.
Yeah, or even more so, people who, you know, are able to get health insurance through their job.
Exactly.
I mean, South Carolina has a very large tourism industry, which in turn has a lot of service sector workers, particularly restaurants and hotels. And in a lot of those jobs, those people don't get health care.
Absolutely. Yeah. And let's talk about the growing number of contract jobs that are being brought into the state up in Spartanburg. BMW has a lot of contractors at their work. A lot of the companies I've worked with in the past several years, including as a contractor, I had to pay the full cost of my insurance. It wasn't something that my employer shared with me, as you do at many, many full-time jobs. And I have friends who are state workers who talk about how much worse state insurance is getting. And in South Carolina, the quality of care is not good compared to other places. Thoughts, questions? Come on, guys, talk to me.
Well, I feel like one other aspect to this that I don't know that we've necessarily addressed is sort of how disproportionately this affects people of color in South
yes.
Carolina. In particular, if you look at the poverty line itself, and we're looking at, what, 138% of that?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So right now that gets us to about $16,753 per year. And if you look at the average income of an African-American in an urban environment in South Carolina, they are making less than that. They're making about $16,200. And the standard deviation on that is also about $1,000, which tells you that that's a very narrow spread.
Uh-huh.
Most people are making about that much. And so you're having over half of the population already that would be able to benefit from this.
Absolutely.
And meanwhile, you look at the white income, and that is up at, what, $28,600?
Which is not very high either.
No, and that has a very large standard deviation, showing that that has a very wide spread. So you have many, you know, white South Carolinians who would benefit from this, as well as many who make absurd amounts of money.
Uh-huh.
But it really does go to show that this really is targeting, in a lot of ways, the people of color in our state disproportionately.
Well, when you talk about South Carolina, you can't talk about anything without talking about white supremacy.
Yeah.
And I think we can all agree in this room that the history of this state has been to, as much as possible, I'm not going to say punish the minority, but certainly keep them in their place. And I used air quotes there that y'all can't see.
Don't worry, I saw them.
Well,
yeah.
I don't. And here's what's even more insidious
yeah.
about it is that it's not this overt attempt to deny people the right to life.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. this is decades of, you know, people can take care of it themselves. The government is the problem. I believe that we all pay taxes. I mean, people may not be happy about that, but I'm pretty sure we're happy with the fact that our roads get smoothed out.
South Carolina.
That finally our state expanded 26 a little bit, heading
yeah.
down to Charleston.
Oh, yeah. No.
I mean, that's a project that needed to happen about 20 years ago. And
yep.
seeing as how we're typically 20 years late, I think we're right on track. You know, our taxes go to pay for a lot of things that we take for granted,
mm-hmm.
and yet somehow Republicans have gotten people, particularly white people, working class, to somehow believe that government is the thing that's holding them back. And, you know, if not for government, they'd be rich just like the people who are exploiting them.
That is good social media right there. Somebody's got a marketing team that knows what they're doing.
It's almost like they're all the ones with the money.
I can't imagine where they get that idea. It couldn't be the millions of dollars that are spent from in our state by out-of-state interests who
elect our politicians.
Who elect our politicians, exactly. So I suppose we should get back on the road to Medicaid expansion here and talking about that a little bit. Kyle, you got anything else to add? You got anything you want to talk about with it?
Yeah, lots of thoughts there. One of the other statistics that we determined when we ran the numbers on Medicaid expansion is just like Chris said, yes, it would disproportionately affect people of color in South Carolina. But when we looked at all the numbers, and just to give some larger perspective, the general population in South Carolina, the overall population is about 65% or so white, just under 30% black, and 5% Latino, among other
ethnicities.
So when we ran the numbers, the majority of the people who would have been eligible for the Medicaid expansion were white.
Of course.
And so when you look at this also, you have to, obviously, like just as you said, you have to talk about race when you talk about problems in South Carolina, and we also have to talk about class. And that's part of what, when you talk about the future of the network on this issue, is we have a class analysis, just like Majestica Simpkins said. We're class conscious, a multiracial, multi-issue popular movement, and talking about the future, we're going to continue to organize around this issue, continue to bang the drum on this issue, because we're working year-round around these kind of principles, values, and ideas, and that's a winning strategy in the long run. What we're looking at, and this I wanted to applaud the New Legacy podcast for this. This is a lesson we learned from the Majestica Simpkins School for Human Rights. I'm sure that'll be a future theme, a future subject for this podcast, but. One of the lessons we learned is when there's a national issue, this is you introduced this podcast with, the federal judge in Texas ruled the ACA unconstitutional, then you have to find the local hook if you want to get something in local media.
Yeah.
And in lieu of the fact that local media in South Carolina not only ignores the Progressive Network largely, but bends over backwards to write the network out of stories.
Oh, absolutely.
And so that's part of where this podcast is so important. It can fill in that gap of the local hook with a class conscious and a radical perspective. What does radical mean, Vicki, or anyone who went to the Majestica School or has graduated?
Radical means somebody who goes up like a little bit against the norms here.
Well, what's the word? What's the Latin word for radical? Anyone know?
Root.
Uh-huh. When you're radical, just like the Progressive Network, the New Legacy Project is, you're addressing the root causes of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the network grew out of GROW. Remember GROW?
Yeah, GROW was an environment or organization, but it was green something, wasn't it?
It was the what was it, Wayne?
I can't remember what
it was. It was the grassroots organizing workshop. And yeah, it was an anti-nuclear environmental working class movement, doing the same work we're doing now. And what GROW connected the dots on in the mid-90s, and before even, was that they weren't getting legislation passed on environmental issues. They weren't able to get anything passed for women's rights. Labor unions were losing. Mm-hmm. Gay rights weren't getting across the finish line. Mm-hmm. What was the connecting dot on all those issues? It was a lack of what?
Power.
It was a lack of power. And so what do we need to do? Is we need to understand, and I think this is what the New Legacy Podcast understands, and I appreciate you doing this, introducing this with the federal issue, a national issue, and bringing it back to the state issue.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, the way you build power is you start at the local and the state level. And that's what the network's been doing for 20 years. We're not working on federal issues because we don't have the power to address those issues.
As our founder says, and I said it last time, before you can fix D.C., you have to fix S.C.
Exactly. So. And Majestica Simpkins was doing that in her lifetime, and we're carrying that on. And that's what we're doing, organizing around this issue, because it's a principle, value, and idea that in a advanced society, you provide health care to your citizens.
Absolutely.
As a right to all citizens, because we're the United States, just to get some global perspective, is the only advanced country that doesn't do that. So where does that come in at the state level? Well, first of all, we're not going to be able to move that ball in the Congress. So we're working here at the state level, well, let's beat the drum on Medicaid expansion. It's the soft underbelly of capitalism.
Capitalism, exactly. So we are at 27 minutes, but I just want to let's talk about a little bit about the Majeska School, which is coming up this spring. Wayne, why don't you start? Tell us one thing you learned at the Majeska School that you didn't know before you went.
I learned a good condensed version of the very early history of South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it wasn't born out of any kind of like British trading company. It was more so second generation Barbadian, like farmer plantation type people who really kind of established some of the early settlements here. Some of the native history here was something that I wasn't too familiar with as well. So that's one thing I took away from it. Besides the fact too that the Constitution that was drafted here just after the Civil War, before
was the 1868 Constitution.
Yeah, just before Reconstruction of white supremacy took hold, was, you know, markedly more progressive than in some respects the one we have today.
That's, I agree, and I love that Constitution. I have read it. It's beautiful. Y'all should look it up and read it. Kyle, what's one of the things you learned at the Majeska School that maybe you didn't know before you went?
I learned how much I didn't know.
Yeah.
But just like Wayne said, the Reconstruction was an important piece, sort of a connector dot, if you will, on the work that we're doing, that there's a continuum in this work that's gone on for a long time, that things didn't get this way overnight, and they're not going to change overnight. But all along the way, all along South Carolina's history, we've had a few people who've had all the money and the power, and they've lorded it over the rest of us. But all along, there have always been people who have organized.
And who were fighting.
Who have fought back in communities of shared values. And even when they didn't win, they kept at it.
And a lot of times it was a multiracial coalition as well. Even if you go a little further back in the history, multiracial, multigender, multicultural group of people who were fighting for the rights of South Carolina. We get a lot of well-deserved criticism, I think is the word I'll use, for our past and for our structural problems. But there have always been people fighting for it. I think that's something I learned at the Majeska School, too. One of the things that I wanted to mention that I learned that I didn't know about were the textile strikes that happened in the 1930s. There were 7 people killed in Honey Path, essentially by mill owners and their deputized law enforcement in the 1930s. And that sort of ended union movement in South Carolina. They were It didn't end it. There's always been people trying to unionize in labor unions in South Carolina, but it's sort of still hard to, we've never really recovered from that moment in our state's history. And that's something that I think we'll talk about in a later podcast. Chris, I know that you haven't been to the Majeska School. Can you tell us a little about what you're looking forward to?
I mean, I'm just looking forward to learn more about the actual history of South Carolina, because I grew up in New York primarily, and so most of my knowledge of the history of South Carolina comes, you know, from relatively brief...
Winners.
I mean, yeah. Like, we would always, you know, reference the Civil War. That's sort of what we would always go back to, is just say, oh, yeah, that happened, and we won. Look at us go. And we never really dug into the nuances of South Carolinian history, especially. And as we went on, South Carolina was sort of a less and less prominent role in anything. So we just ignored it and wrote it off as just, this is a racist state. We don't really have to pay attention to this because all it is racism. And
it's not that simple.
It's not that simple. There's a lot more here. And so I'm excited to learn more of those details, to be able to get a more fully formed picture of what South Carolina is.
Yeah, I'm super excited you can go.
Yeah, no,
so
me too.
So I think that wraps up this section of the podcast. If you will join us in a moment, I think Wayne Borders and I have already recorded an interview where we will be discussing what the New Legacy Project is and why you should join us for our work here. Thank you so much for your time, and moving on along. Bye, guys.
I'm Vicki Perry, and this is Wayne Borders, and we're going to talk to you a little bit about the New Legacy Project and what it is, specifically the South Carolina New Legacy Project. So, Wayne, do you want to start us off and tell us how it was founded?
Sure. So, I'm Wayne Borders. I'm one of the co-founders of the South Carolina New Legacy Project, which is a project within the South Carolina Progressive Network. We organized ourselves as the Young People's Faction within Progressive Network in around 2014 at a fall conference that was taking place at Penn Center in Beaufort. Daniel DeWeese, Kyle Criminger, and myself were the main instigators in the creation of the group, with some input from a young lady named Allie Cohen from Coastal Carolina University out in Conway. And the premise of the New Legacy Project is essentially that we understood that our elder activists couldn't continue on this work, and at some point there would have to be a changing of the guard. And as some of the youngest people consistently in the room, we felt the responsibility to be those people to create the beginnings of what would become a path into the organization for younger people.
Now, you say that y'all were down at Penn Center for the fall conference. Is there a story to how it was created?
Yeah, so if you've ever been to a New Legacy Project meeting, or if you've attended any Progressive Network gathering where New Legacy Project people start to go off into our own little corner, there's typically some aspect or discussion of fire. So it was, like I said, 2014. It was our fall conference, and we had decided that we were just going to stay up one of those nights, and there was a bonfire that we kind of kept going, and we're having discussions as people were coming in and out of, you know, the circle just to chit-chat and spend some time together in the evening. And that's when we had the genesis thought of, well, what is going to come next after, you know, our mentors are no longer the heads of, you know,
able to continue the work.
Yeah, able to continue the work, you know, or able to lead. Who's going to take up their charge? And really almost looking to each other, you know, for that support, because we know that this is not work that any one person can do.
Mm-hmm.
And we certainly don't want to put things in a situation where it's a cult of personality.
Mm-hmm.
And so with some, around that bonfire where we were trying to decide, you know, what should we call ourselves? And Daniel explains it a lot better than I do, but the idea of what is that legacy to be was kind of how we name shopped amongst ourselves this idea of a new legacy project, the idea of a new legacy.
That sounds awesome. Now, can you tell us a little bit about the kind of organizing work that we do as part of a New Legacy Project, which I'm also a member of, but I'm interviewing Wayne like I know nothing about it. So please tell us about the work that the New Legacy Project is doing currently.
Yeah, so the new Legacy Project, the work that we do is specifically oriented around young people and looking further down into time of our future. So one of our big initiatives first was to do a State of the Youth report, which would be a compendium of information about what it is to be a young person in South Carolina. What does that look like in terms of qualitative and quantitative data? So things like how much money does someone between, you know, a certain age bracket mate. What's the average level of education? Are we homeowners? What does our health look like? How many or like what percentage of that population is incarcerated? So those kind of things to kind of put together what would be an average young South Carolinian.
Yeah.
We've also been working on the idea of using art as an instrument through which we can teach people things about civics and even some of this, you know, qualitative data, mm-hmm. you know, what the life of a young person is in South Carolina, And we did that through a collaboration with local artists during an arts festival that we came up with, which we call SAFE, but it stands for Subversive Art Festival Extravaganza.
And it's a fun event. I think that one of the things we're looking to do here in the future is to do smaller events around specific topics. And so we're very excited about that in the upcoming year. I was going to ask the next question. How are we doing on the state of the youth? How are we going to hear more about that soon, maybe on this very podcast?
Yeah, it's a work that our initial idea was to put it as a large tome that we would then, shop out to our legislators and they would take it seriously and want to address these issues. But as we have gotten more into other aspects of the Progressive Network's workload, and not to mention, we are growing and we have our own personal lives too.
Yeah, and I'm going to add that the New Legacy Project, one of our jobs in the Progressive Network is that we are the manual labor. So we're out there loading in chairs and standing in the hot sun for events and things like that.
I wouldn't say that's our primary function, but certainly any organization is going to need, people not only who are committed, to attending meetings and showing up for functions, but at a certain point, any organization concerned with its longevity must have, foot soldiers.
So my very first event for the South Carolina Progressive Network was the Women's March in January 2016. And I'm telling the story because I need y'all to understand this is part of it is when we do this. And I went up to Brett and asked, well, how can I help? And he assigned me into loading chairs onto a truck. And so from the very moment of my saying, hey, I want to help with Progressive Network, I've been...
It's a very tangible object that you can grab.
So that's one of the things, that stories I wanted to tell. That work is important too, though. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. But even further, we have young people who have a very active voice at even our executive committee level, mm-hmm. where we're making decisions for the whole organization, where we're making decisions on future strategy.
Yeah, and
even current work.
I think that we're doing the policy research is a critical thing. Kyle Kreminger, who you mentioned, is the head, for lack of a better word, of the Progressive Network's policy research arm.
So some of the things that we do where it's not just all work, because we are trying to branch out from just being, work, because we do have money jobs, as I call them.
We will call them income earning opportunities.
So we are trying to also increase the social networking aspect where we actually do just get together and enjoy each other's companies because, we're not just colleagues. We also are friends and we do just check in on each other, not just as good organizers, but also because we actually do
care about each other.
Are forming a community.
And that's really important in South Carolina as we grow our community, is that sometimes when you're on the progressive side of the spectrum, you can feel a little isolated considering the state of our state. So it's very important to form community bonds. I agree with that, Wayne. What kind of things are we doing to form these community bonds?
We started having movie nights. There actually used to be a Progressive Network movie night. It was still going, I think, for about a year or two after I had joined. And with all the work that we were doing, it kind of fell by the wayside. But the New Legacy Project, I think within the last 6 months or so...
we've tried to pick up the mantle.
Started to pick that back up, yeah. I would love for us to do more just either potlucks or just kind of... Game of Thrones hasn't started up again, but hey.
Yeah.
There are enough of us that watch that. Yeah. We could have a TV night.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you that I wouldn't mind watching a lot of Netflix, binge watching some Netflix shows on there.
I just finished season 6 of House of Cards.
Yeah, I have not watched House of Cards. I know it's one of those that I should watch. I watch a lot of true crime stuff. I'm going to tell you that I am not obsessed with serial killers. I like the stories behind the crimes and whys and wheres that they do things and the hows. That sounds creepy, and I may cut this out. But if I leave it in, it'll be fun. but House of Cards would be an excellent show for us to watch, I bet. And West Wing, that could be fun.
Well, maybe, but I also do think that, uh-huh, you know, again, that we are, that, you know, depending on, you know, the general consensus or...
We're a democratic body. We do vote.
that we could watch some things that are even, you know, less taxing on, uh-huh, you know, the drama and having to keep up, yeah, with, like, the details.
You said Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
I'm not going to watch that one with you. It's a little too political for me.
Oh, that's fun. So we're thinking up ways to be more humane,
mm-hmm,
if lack for a better word, and just fun.
Yeah. We want to be a social body where people can come and they can vent and they can, mm-hmm, talk about what's going on in the world, and, you know, we can help each other.
Yeah.
But what's coming up for the new Lexi project?
So I think the biggest thing coming up for us is a concerted effort at recruitment, and also an effort to do more popular and community education.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that you and one of our other members, Chris McLaughlin, have met with some young people at a local Unitarian Universalist church.
Mm-hmm.
There is a college NAACP group that we've, you know, considered reaching out to bring them into some of the work that we and the network have been doing.
We live in a very collegey town. We've got, like, Benedict and Allen and
Columbia College,
Midlands Tech, and the University of South Carolina, obviously. So theoretically, there have to be people out there who would be interested in, mm-hmm, in the work we do. And I agree. I think we need to reach them. And, mm-hmm, even if they leave after a little while, we can sort of help them take this kind of work to their own communities in the future.
Well, and one of the challenges, I mean, the truly in just reaching young people in general is,
mm-hmm,
is, especially, you know, if they're not college students, then they are working.
Oh, absolutely. And, or they're young parents.
Yeah. And these are some of the things that we've discussed internally at, mm-hmm, meetings. You know, how do we better reach those individuals? How do we better simply, if not simply reach out to them, how do we simply make it a way for them to be included? And, yeah, so,
absolutely.
So those will probably be some changes that, you know, if we do this interview, mm-hmm, in a year,
maybe we have something different. Yeah. I can tell you that most of the people in our group, this is not necessarily a fault, but it's definitely something we need to work on, are, like, never been married or just in a dating relationship, no kids kind of situation. There are a lot of people our age with babies, Wayne.
Yeah.
And young children. Yeah, exactly. Mine too. I have a good friend of mine who's very active in environmental activism, but she can't come to the meetings because she has a 6-month-old. So we've got to figure out how to work around that too. And again, these are conversations we've had before. We have our youngest member of the New Legacy Project, who's about 5, who would come with his mom,
yeah,
some for a while, and we miss Manu and Allison. Any final words?
Just check out the South Carolina Progressive Network. Go to our website, scpronet.com.
Are we a .com or .org?
I believe it's SEPROject.com. I think it's SEPROject.com.
Okay. I couldn't remember, and I wanted to say that just in case. Look up both.
certainly read our blog. The Progressive Network has its own Facebook group.
Yep. And so does the New Legacy Project.
The New Legacy Project has its own page.
We meet.
It's an every other Wednesday situation. Uh-huh. So either check in with the Progressive Network, give us a call, and someone can point you to one of the young people in our group. By the time this episode goes up or this gets done, I want to say our next meeting in the new year should be, I think, January 9th.
Yeah, this one, I think, episode is going to go up on January 8th. So come visit us tomorrow.
Yeah. And if not then, and if not, you know, January 9th, then January 23rd would be our next meeting.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that same biweekly, not biweekly, but like every
twice
other.
Twice a month.
Yeah, twice a month. Every other Wednesday. There we go. At 6 o'clock. And
we look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, because, again, that's one of the biggest things that we're looking forward to is recruiting additional members and also continuing the work of Majeska Simpkins and the South Carolina Progressive Network.
And look for an upcoming episode on her. I'm very excited about doing one around her life and the work that she did, because she is certainly a hero of mine and most of the people in the network. I might interview the person who wrote the book on her life, so we'll see. keep your ears tuned here, and thank you for your time tonight, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, thank you.